you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout.
Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
I still remember when you used to be now.
Hi, I'm Gary Knowles. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share about health and healing, commentaries by others and myself. And we always start with the latest on health. We'll go from the latest on cinnamon, helping to lessen the damage from a high-fat diet. And this is from a health technologies center. And then also talking about finding colorectal cancer reported more commonly in individuals with unhealthy lifestyle. The Cleveland Clinic, shouldn't be a surprise, is pro-inflammatory. We're also going to look at how curcumin, it just keeps getting better with this. Thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed literature show curcumin is very important. In this case, it helps improve the modulation of intercellular signaling. Virginia Commonwealth University, I'll explain what that means in lay language. And also a poor environmental quality linked to elevated cancer rates. And that's University of Illinois. What does it mean, environmental quality? I'll explain it. This is the program that gives you the latest state-of-the-art information. Always some high-profile institutions that are doing good work. We just never hear about it. Time permitting today, and I always say that because I never know how long I'll get in one particular area, and that might limit getting that on that same day, so it might be another day. But I want to have Jill Stein talk about her concept of fighting for the greater good and forgetting about our America's two-party system. It's only 2 minutes long. I agree with that, especially as she's back 6 months after losing. Hillary Clinton is reemerging, as I predicted she would. She has no intention of not being president, irrespective of what she has done that would disappoint a lot of people or disqualify her. I'll tell you what she's planning, and it's once again, it's control the Democratic Party, and her operatives are already in place, so we should be looking at other people, including Jill Stein. Also, there's a TED talk on war and weapons and the persistence of global conflict. Why do we have all this global conflict? I'll share a commentary with you on this, and I think you'll find it important because war is a racket. And David Rosen of Counterpunch has some very insightful ideas to share. Also today, I'm going to give you a sneak preview of two things that are actually coming together. One is, employers now realize that your work skills will be useless. Who says? Well, Danielle Paquette of Washington Post did a very good piece on this. And this was based upon the Pew Research Center. They're finding out that what you're in college for now, forget it. They're way ahead of you. In fact, there are millions of students studying for material that is already out of date, for industries that are already obsolete. And it means we're going to have a massive, massive amount of people in the very near future who are going to be unemployed, and yet they're highly qualified as far as their knowledge. At the same time, there's according to an article in The Atlantic by Elena Strauss, there's a whole new millennial housing trend. It's a repeat of the Middle Ages. Communal living is hardly a departure from tradition. It's a return to how humans have been making their homes for thousands of years. I believe that that would not work today, but I believe that there is a way of not having a communal living, but what I call intended living. I'll explain what that means and hopefully help guide more information in that area, because more people, especially younger people and older people, are finding they just can't make it on their own anymore. Also, Joe Rogan, Why Americans Are Still Asleep. And so we have all this plus some commentaries. I don't know. I wrote two commentaries yesterday. One I wrote when I heard of why the Democrats believe that there should be a return to democratic standards and hence control the Democratic Party and the standard bearers of that party. So I simply wrote a commentary about, for 8 years, you had the total ability to educate, fireside chats, going on the stump, and you didn't do any of it. Nothing. Zero. So I'm going to go through what they didn't do and what we need a third group of third-party candidates to talk about, because they're already figuring Trump won't make 2 years. I believe they're right. And I'm getting a guest on, really interesting, if he's available later this week, to talk about how, you know, every time these what they're calling preppers, people trying to prepare for the future, they call them conspiracy theorists, nut jobs. Well, guess who has spent hundreds of billions, with a B, billions of dollars, possibly more than $1 trillion on prepping? The government. But not everyone in the government. Just certain select people. And just certain select industrialists. The scale of their prepping is mind-boggling. You can't imagine what they have done. Entire cities they have built underground. How much it's cost, how long they've been doing it, and who's on their you-get-in list and everyone else. And what about all those sirens in case there's nuclear attack? Worthless. Because as one of their experts said, a general, from the time you hear the siren and you go in the building just a few minutes later, that whole building and you are going to be dust. So what exactly are they planning for us, the rest of the people? Nothing. Well, surely they're doing something. Nothing. They have what is called continuity of government, but aren't we a part of what should be protected? No. Has it ever been in their minds that we should be protected? No. Not even the wealthy get protected here, unless you're the super wealthy, the Bill Gates, Warren Buffetts. So that's going to be an interesting hour. I'm setting aside a whole hour for that. So as you see, we have a lot to share. And we do pay it. Excuse me. I'm a little congested because I've been doing so much flying and getting myself back into good shape, which I'm in the process of doing now. But I've been doing lots of lectures. Some of my lectures go on for 3, 4, 5 hours. So my voice is a little strained. I'm going to start with health and nutrition, as I always do, because this is something that everybody benefits from if they want to use it. Cinnamon is one of those wonderful aromatic spices that we like, but generally don't have it when we grow up because it was in our breakfast cereals. When I grew up, it was cinnamon on oatmeal. When was the last time you had cinnamon? Rarely. And when you have it on something, there's generally too little there to make a difference. I'm talking about actually having enough cinnamon, like 1/4 teaspoon. Why? Because cinnamon may help you if you're diabetic. It'll help lower your blood sugar. It helps turn off inflammation in your stomach and intestines, so it's great for itises and inflammation of the bowel and GERD. But also, this is according to the Health Technology Center, cinnamon can lessen the risk of cardiovascular damage if you happen to be the average American and you're on a high-fat diet by activating the body's antioxidant, anti-inflammatory systems, and slowing the fat-storing processes. This is according to the American Heart Association's Arterial Sclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology study. And it was presented at their scientific session. In this study, the researchers found that cinnamon, for 12 weeks, 3 months, not long, was able to have enormous benefit to the body's fat system in almost all of the different test models. So if you're overweight, if you're eating a high-fat diet, make sure that once a day you're getting cinnamon. Throw 1/4 teaspoon into your smoothie in the morning. That's another way of getting it. From the Cleveland Clinic, a Cleveland Clinic colon cancer risk assessment survey found that respondents who exercised more, followed a healthy diet, and did not smoke were less likely to have a personal history of colorectal cancer or colon polyps. And they studied 27,000 respondents in this. So that is well known to the people in this audience. Why? Here's what they said. Quote, colon cancer is a preventable disease. These results emphasize the known modifiable factors that can alter the risk. That's according to Dr. Carol Burke of the Cleveland Clinic's gastroenterologist division and the current president of the American College of Gastroenterology. Now, here's my take on it. And this has actually happened in my own family. When a member of my family said, oh, gee whiz, you know, I found I had polyps. I said, yeah, why is that a surprise? Look at your diet. Of course, my family has the typical American diet. And long ago, it became a realization I couldn't change that. Did I try? Oh, you bet. To the point of having hands go up and say, enough, stop, shut up, Gary. Don't want to hear what you have to say. I'm making my own choices. They were right. Except when you love people and you know the outcome, you want to try to do what you can, even at the risk of being annoying. But in the end, it's their choice. So I watch people in my family drink all the bad beverages and smoke and eat meat. And it was rare to ever have fruits and vegetables. And grains were non-existent except, you know, some kind of white flour product and white sugar. No one ever complained of how much you ate and how bad it was. No one ever stopped and said, I'm eating 23 French fries loaded with fat and saturated calories and with salt. No one would ever say boo, but take five vitamins and their head exploded. Their heart would jump out of their chest and they'd have chase around the room. What are you doing taking five vitamins? You don't have any life yet. All you're doing is taking vitamins all day long, every second of every day. Five vitamins in a day. Well, friend, you just had a teaspoon of sugar in your coffee. In fact, you had 2 teaspoons and there are about 1,000 grains of sugar in one of those teaspoons. So you taking 2,000 grains of sugar means nothing, granules of sugar, me taking five vitamins, and suddenly it's the end of the world. That's the concept. We have radicalized health to the point where a lot of people are actually afraid to say if they were doing anything. It's kind of, Sarah, it was the hidden factor. You were a closet health food person. You didn't want people to know how many grams of fiber you had, or that you were actually exercising, or you weren't drinking their coffee or eating their food. But boy, you were just the most popular person in the room if you were fat and smoked and drank and had high blood pressure and had a heart attack, and you were taking, you know, 7 medications, completely normal. So I, as much as anyone, appreciate when people say, gee whiz, well, it's in the genes. It's never in the genes. That, excuse me, is a myth. It's in the behavior. That's why you can have 3 generations of people all coming down with high blood pressure or all having breast cancer, the women. And then you say, well, it's genetic. No, it's not genetic. It's familial. It's what you do each day. If you grew up being taught this is the way we eat, this is how we eat, this is how much you eat, and this is how often you eat, and this is what you eat when you're angry, and this is what you eat when you're sad, and this is what you eat when you're depressed, and this is what you eat, you know, on holidays, and this is how much you eat on Thanksgiving, then one day you end up with breast cancer, and someone tells you it's genetic. No. So colon cancer, if you got rid of the meat, sugars, including high fructose, soft drinks, all of the French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, pizzas, pretzels, you got rid of those, and you started taking healthy vegetables and fruits. If you took a pint of blueberries and a pint of raspberries every day and ate an apple, you're cutting your risk of almost every disease by half. If you were to take ubiquinol, coenzyme Q10, vitamin E, and mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols, vitamin C, and L-carnitine, half of all heart disease would not exist in the United States. Those are easy to do. The difficulty is not being healthy. The difficulty is justifying your getting rid of your comfort foods and your comfort behavior. That's the challenge. But I'm glad the Cleveland Clinic finally put that on record and made that statement. Also from the Virginia Commonwealth University, studies show that type 2 diabetes can be improved when you're taking curcumin, and that's important. It actually is manifesting a modulation of intracellular signaling and organization of tight junctions, all of which means that it improves your intestinal barrier function. You do not want large particulate matter going from your intestine into your bloodstream because the body will attack that as if it's a foreign agent. It's not. It may be food you ate. But because you didn't chew your food, you didn't have it completely enmeshed with enzymes, tylenol amylase, by chewing at least 10 times before you swallow. And without drinking a cold or hot beverage with a meal, it allows normal pepsin and trypsin and amylase and protease and tylenol, all of these enzymes, to break down the food in your stomach. Because every time you're eating and you drink something, you've diluted your digestive acids, you've made it more difficult until one, at some point, your stomach is full, so full of food, partially eaten, and so full of liquid that it starts to dump. A little flap at the bottom of the stomach opens, and it's the pyloric sphincter, and that little flap then starts to allow food to get dumped into the intestine, partially digested. The trouble is the rest of the digestive tract is not able to completely digest it. Then larger particles get in through what we call leaky gut into the bloodstream. Now your body attacks these as if these are foreign agents, and you end up with an autoimmune response. So you're destroying your immune system every time you have something to eat in measure by not chewing your food, masticating it thoroughly. And that's why juices are so important, because juices are 100% digested, where other foods are not. So curcumin improves the strength and integrity of your intestinal membranes. Also, experts warn that recent legislation could jeopardize research on the links between cancer and the environment. A new study reveals an association between cumulative exposure to harmful environmental factors and cancer incidence across the United States, with prostate and breast cancer especially demonstrating strong links with poor environmental quality. And this was published in the peer review Cancer, a peer review journal of the American Cancer Society. And the findings may help to reduce the burden of cancer by allowing officials to identify vulnerable communities in need of attention. But under this new administration, what is happening is that anyone who's a real scientist for the people at the EPA is being stymied, and they want to get heads of industry, scientists associated with the very polluting industries, to come in and be on the advisory committees of the EPA. That would be like having the tobacco industry scientists who deny cancer and emphysema come in and be on an advisory of determining do cigarettes cause cancer or emphysema. We had that for 100 years. We still have that when it comes to nuclear. Almost all the advisors, with few exceptions, that sit on the National Nuclear Commissions are pro-industry scientists. So that's not good. It also says that we no longer will be getting the type of information we need to show us how dangerous our environment is. And every study is showing us the more pollutants in the environment, in the air, give you an idea, the sicker you're going to be in China, in northern China, where they have a lot of their coal-powered plants. Over 1 million of its citizens die every year just from the lung congestion and cancer and pulmonary conditions from coal dust. And they believe that's an understated figure. So when a government says, yeah, we're killing 1 million people plus every year just just from coal dust. And we just go along as if it doesn't matter where you live, doesn't matter how much pollution there is around where you live, it's not harmful. Who says it's not harmful? Well, a group of scientists. And what are their affiliations? Well, they're all associated with polluting industries. So we should believe them? Of course you should believe them. The New York Times believe them. New York Times has never found, I believe, a corporation or governmental agency that it challenged, unless it was forced to. So just be aware, the more time you spend in nature, the healthier you're going to be, the more green space you're around, the healthier you're going to be, the more clean water you drink, the healthier you're going to be, the more healthy organic food, non-GMOs, the healthier you're going to be. That's how you know you're doing something proactive. Trusting the government, not a good idea. Trusting industry, never. So that's crucial. And finally, resveratrol. I've been talking about it since its first studies, over 1,000 studies on resveratrol, could help protect your arteries. From Boston University, there was a Journal of Arteriosclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology and Peripheral Vascular Disease, and they had a scientific conference. They found that what you want to do to reduce arterial stiffness, which reduces hardening of the arteries, reduces heart disease. It's that simple. Soft, pliable, healthy arteries, healthier heart. Now, one compound makes a difference. You can get it in red wine, though that wouldn't be how I would suggest because it's too little, like 5 milligrams. You can get it in grape juice. That would be very good. Organic grape juice. You can get it in eating grapes. That's good. Or you can take a tablet. That would be your highest quantity. 100 milligrams and up is very therapeutic. And that's resveratrol. Res, R-E-S, Vera, V-E-R-A, Trol, T-R-O-L, resveratrol. And it can shift that emphasis, the stiffness of the aorta, which is the largest artery, and it decreases the risk of a stroke or heart attack. So that's good news. Something that can help us live a longer life. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Whoa, Western Union man, send a telegram to my baby. Send a telegram, send a telegram. Whoa, send a telegram to my baby. This is what I want you to say. Want you to tell her that I'm all alone. Tried to call her on the phone. Tell her I'm in misery and think she's avoiding me. And it's a telegram.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. When I'm on the road, as I am now, and I'm filming nonstop for 2 important new documentaries, I'll premiere these, one in the late summer and one in the late fall. 2 very important topics. I won't discuss them now. But they're completely different from what I've done in the past and brand new information that can help us live a longer, healthier life. But I also continue to counsel people when I'm on the road, when I have time, and also to do lectures, though mainly now, which is very convenient, I can do Skype lectures and have, and just did one, and it was a long one. And the webinars, did a long one, almost 3 hours. But I pay attention to what people are asking. What are the issues important in your life? And then I try to find the latest research. And so when people are looking at our last presidential campaign, they're saying, wow, there's either the true believers in the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton, or there were the not true believers but desperate believers, people who have been told so often that things would change for the better, industries would return, jobs would return, quality of life would return, and it didn't. It's not just the Obama administration. It was also the Bush administration, and it was the Clinton administration, and it went clear back to the Reagan administrations. So for at least 36 years, we've seen tens of thousands of factories close, 58,000 factories just in the last 17 years, with millions of people having to find other work or finding part-time work or work way below a quality of life. And so one of the reasons that people are choosing a person like Trump is not because they're, quote, the deplorables. Boy, is that a big, big mistake. if you're traveling America as I do, if you're speaking with average people, and you're suddenly, because you voted for someone who's making you a promise, and you don't believe in the man's pump, his ego and his exuberance for his own profile, you just want work. You want to keep away from debtors' prisons. And so you vote for someone because the other person didn't do anything for you. So we're not taking into consideration the context of why people make choices. And also, what about all the wonderful women we have, the phenomenally dynamic human beings who do so much to improve the quality of our lives? I'm setting aside all that our mothers do and it should be treasured and are. But what about the women who've stepped forward, the Jane Goodalls and the Vandana Shivas? We have so many, and I try to have as many as possible on this program. Why in the world would any woman who is educated about the world, its issues, want anything to do with Hillary Clinton? She's anti-woman on every level. So when I look at this, I'm saying we don't want these two parties or anyone represented or associated with them. They've been corrupted. They're greedy. They're selfish. They're either technocrats from the best and brightest schools, we're told, who then go in and figure out ways that they can show that they're deserving that Black American Express credit card that has an unlimited balance and all the perks that come with your political and ideological and economic alignments. And that's all Washington is, or Wall Street. So here are the issues that we need. We, not the Democrat Republic, they're incapable of doing it. We, the people, need to start having small support groups at the grassroots level that can educate ourselves, sharing that information, whether it's articles, documentaries, webinars, any form that it comes, and networking with the millions of people, hundreds of millions of people around the world who are as frustrated and angry as we are. But instead of our anger becoming an anger of apathy, an anger of resigning ourselves to the inevitability of the corruption of the system, we empower ourselves into being outraged and doing something positive. Here are the issues that are not being dealt with by either party nor the media. Campaign finance reform. We should not have any reform of our existing system. We should have it completely overhauled with no money, not a nickel allowed for any office in any campaign. Have a simple, it's very easy to do. There are countries that do this. You have a lottery. Anyone who wants to run for a particular office fills out a detailed questionnaire about their background, their qualifications, and most importantly, on all the important issues that they might be involved with, how would they vote or what would they do or what are their specific ideas to improve it? That way we can, with the internet being what it is today, we can review these and then we, the people, can make selections. And then you bring it down and then you have it automatically by lottery. You have debates. We can watch these, televised and broadcast. And then we end up in 3 months with people that we feel are at least most qualified, but it's not going to be a very wealthy person in Las Vegas giving $5 million or $100 million and saying, now, I want you to believe in this. I want you to go and carry forth our policies. So that would really change the whole system. We need to repeal all of the post-9/11 legislation, all of it, the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act. We need to kill completely the Citizens United. We need to look at our health care system, the only health care system we need. Obamacare was as bad as Hillary Clinton's original proposal, and I was the one who let it be known through documents that we received that 450 plus people from the insurance industry, the profit in hospitals and the pharmaceutical companies were working behind the scenes in secret with the White House and her to create a program that would have completely destroyed all alternative health care. Every holistic doctor and every holistic alternative practitioner would have been out of business. They had five years in prison and $5,000 fine per infraction. That meant if you saw a patient, if you saw 10 patients and you gave them a vegan diet, you'd be in jail for a long time and you go bankrupt. That was actually in the law that proposed. So when I got that, we began to do a whole series of programs, and I went around the country, city after city, doing lectures. People didn't know this. I said, holistic doctors didn't know it. Major doctors didn't know it. That only what came out of the library medicine would be accepted and nothing else. So even if you had cures for disease, you would go to prison and lose your life savings. If you killed every patient, as long as you're using orthodox medicine, you'd be rewarded. That's the insanity of that, and that was Hillary Clinton. So Obama was no better. It was biased. It was written. By the way, all you have to do is take a look at the logs of who from the insurance industry visited the White House, how often they visited, who they met with, and it was hundreds of visits where they were writing the laws. Who wrote the laws? Legislators? Those idiots couldn't write anything except their name on a check. Those people were from the insurance industry. Lawyers and lobbyists wrote the entire Obamacare. Not a period on a paper was put there by the President of the United States. That shows you how much control the hidden hand and the forces of the oligarchs and corporatization had in this whole process. Yet instead of saying we have a failed law, let us go to universal health care, put it under Medicare. No one is left out. Every single person in America is in. Nobody goes bankrupt. You get rid of $1 trillion, $100 billion in oversight of administration fees. You get rid of all defensive medicine. You get rid of all these unnecessary tests and excessive testing. You get rid of all this overtreatment. You get rid of the compulsory malpractice and make medicine what it should be. Quality time spent with a patient, and also open it up to encouraging alternative medicine and also actually promote prevention. You could have preventative medicine taught in every school, in every college, and have channels up on the internet where you go to find out about how do you prevent breast cancer, heart disease, obesity, and conditions we call mental illness, which are not. How can I help my child, David, who's acting out in class, and the teacher says David has ADHD and needs to be medicated, and the school psychologist agrees, and the school psychiatrist is going to give him Ritalin. How can I see, does David really have a brain chemical imbalance? Here are the articles that show there is no such thing as brain chemical imbalance. Here and treatment that can be diagnosed. Here are all the different studies showing children acting as children. So understand what it means to be a child and what it means to be a child's behavior today. Stop trying to pathologize a whole group of kids because it's profitable to one group. That should be in everyone's awareness. The more information, quality information you give to challenge the existing corporatized information, which is propaganda, the more people are going to say no to the sugar, no to that, no to this prescription, no to that diagnosis. That's what universal health care at its best could do. And it would be relatively inexpensive. You could charge a small tax for everyone. So even a person on welfare could still pay some small amount. But everybody then is covered. Otherwise, they're going to go from one mess to another mess to another mess. And still, even if you're covered, it doesn't mean you're going to be saved or the procedure you're getting is necessary or safe. Also, all of our health agencies at the federal level, the FDA, the CDC, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, U.S. Public Health Service, they are all pimping for the pharmaceutical industry and big insurance. That's all they do. And also, the government has enormous control over large segments of the mainstream media. And I believe that we should stop this idea of trying to sanction one set of facts and call other facts fake news. Because right now, and it was easy to see where they were going with this, anything they didn't agree with, the corporations didn't agree with, the media didn't agree with, the government didn't agree with, they then started saying, stay away from these sources. We're going to inform you these are fake news sources. They're not. In fact, the best sources, like Consortium and Op-Ed, and Countercurrents, Counterpunch. These are the best sources, the most reliable. So it was easy to see where they were going to go, so then you wouldn't have no choice to know the truth. Also, our government is engaged, along with industry, in anti-science on climate change, anti-science on GMOs, anti-science on the loss of our biodiversity, anti-science on vaccines. Almost everything that you read or hear or see in the mainstream media is anti-science, is fraudulent. How would you know, though, unless you have experience in that field? We don't even have the ability at the New York Times, those clowns that call themselves journalists, we don't even have the ability for those clowns. And if you doubt me, ask them. Call their economic editors over there and say, what is the unemployment rate? Oh, it's 4.8, 4.6. Great. What about the 102 million Americans who had worked or not working or partially working? They're not included in that figure. It's 22 to 24% actual unemployment. And of the actual unemployment, a lot of those people actually are working one job, but making so low a pay, it doesn't cover their expenses. Why can't you just be honest? Because if they told the truth about how many people are actually unemployed, how many factories are closing, this year 3,000 major box stores are going to close, this year, the next 12 months. They can't tell you the truth about anything. So they start off with a lie. Oh, the economy is doing great. Look at these. Yes, certain people in the economy are doing great. Certain industries are doing great. The average person, no. So we just need the truth, and we're not going to get it from the media. And that's unfortunate. In fact, I'm going to share something with you now that shows you how perverse we have become, how, including the alternative media. And this is of an important piece called Forbidden Questions, 24 Key Issues That Neither the Washington Elite Nor the Media Consider Worth Their Bother, by Andrew Bashevich. I'll quote this. I think you'll find this of interest. Donald Trump's election has elicited impassioned affirmations of a renewed commitment to unvarnished truth-telling from the prestige media. The common theme: you know you can't trust him, but trust us to keep dogging him on your behalf. The New York Times has even unveiled a portentous new promotional slogan, quote, "The truth is now more important than ever." For its part, the Washington Post grimly warns that democracy dies in darkness and is offering itself as a source of illumination now that the rotund figure of the 45th president has produced the political equivalent of total eclipse of the sun. Meanwhile, National Public Radio fundraising campaigns are sounding an increasingly panicky note. Give listener, least you be personally responsible for the demise of the republic that you're bravely fighting to save from extinction. Now, if only it were true. But you and I both know, if you've been listening to this radio show for any period of time, it's not true. How wonderful it would be if President Trump's ascendancy had coincided with a revival of hard-hitting, deep-dive, no-holds-barred American journalism. Remember Jack Anderson? Remember when we had real journalists? And alas, that's hardly the case. True, the big media outlets are demonstrating both energy and enterprise in exposing the ineptitude and inconsistencies and the dubious ethical standards, as well as outright lies and fake news that are already emerging as Trump-era signatures. That said, pointing out that the president has again uttered a falsehood, claimed credit for a non-existent achievement, or abandoned some position to which he had previously sworn his faith requires something less than the sleuthing talents of a Sherlock Holmes. As for beating up on poor Sean Spicer for his latest sequence of gaffes, well, that's more akin to sadism than reporting. Apart from a commendable determination to discomfort Trump and members of his inner circle, journalism remains pretty much what it has been prior to November 8th of last year. Personalities built up upon only to be torn down, fads and novelties discovered, celebrated, then mocked, extraordinary stories of ordinary people granted their 15 seconds of fame, only to once again be consigned to oblivion, all served with a side dish of that day's quota of suffering, devastation, and carnage. Now, these remain journalism's stock and trade. As practiced in the United States with certain honorable and hence unprofitable exceptions, journalism remains superficial, voyeuristic, and governed by the attention span of a two-year-old. As a result, all these editors, reporters, columnists, and talking heads who characterize their labors as now more important than ever, ill-serve the public they profess to inform and enlighten. Rather than clearing the air, they befog it further. If anything, the media's current obsession with Donald Trump, his every utterance or tweet treated as breaking news, just provides one additional excuse for highlighting trivia while sliding issues that deserve far more attention than they have currently received. To illustrate, here we'll go through them. I won't go into great depth and all, but you'll get the idea from each one. Excuse me. This is what a four-hour lecture last night does to your throat. One, accomplishing the mission. Well, since the immediate aftermath of World War II, the United States has been committed to defending key allies in Europe and Asia. Not long thereafter, U.S. security guarantees were extended in the Middle East. Under the circumstances, can Americans expect nations in these regions to assume responsibility for managing their own affairs? To put it another way, when, if ever, might the United States forces actually come home? And if it is incumbent upon the United States to police vast areas of the planet in perpetuity, how should momentous changes in the international order, like the rise of China, for example, be accelerated? Now, let me give you an aside. Let's just show you how absurd this is. This is really absurd. How many refugees have fleeing Libya and Syria and Yemen? Excuse me. How many of these refugees have been taken into Saudi Arabia and the other Arab nations? How about zero? But I understand there's a giant city in the desert with air-conditioned homes. Yes. And sanitation, clean drinking water. Yes. And there's not a single person there, not one. And with a country that is the wealthiest country in the Middle East, why would they need our help? Why are we still dependent upon protecting these nations when they're the ones who caused the suffering to begin with? There is no question any longer, because we have WikiLeaks actual cables showing that Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, United Arab Emirates, Oman, Bahrain have all participated regularly and actively in recruiting terrorists, teaching terrorist schools, funding terrorists, and then sending them into battle to do their job. ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, and over 22 separate terrorist organizations. So we're still protecting them? From whom? Their own citizens who want democracy? It's insane. So consider that. Also, America's military supremacy. We're number one in the world. In fact, we spend more each year on our military-industrial complex than all the other nations of the world combined. Russia, for example, spends about 4.3% of its gross domestic product on its military. We spend 56% minimally. Why? I did some research by contacting foundations to specialize in government accountability. They're non-political. They simply say, how are you spending this money? One tiny example. This is only one in their tens of thousands of examples. For one project, the Defense Department gave 10 separate contracts, all identical, to create the same product that would never be used. Billions of dollars wasted, and that's how the game is played. Well, guess where the person overseeing that department goes to work when they get out of the Pentagon procurement program? They go into one of those positions, big paying positions. How many of them are there out there, contractors? 400,000 in Washington, D.C. area. 400,000. Now, that is individuals and corporations. Put it all together, it's millions of people. They need you to believe that we are at risk, both realistically and existentially, from terrorists. We are not. They need you to believe that if we don't keep pouring $400 billion a year total into the military-industrial spy complex, that somehow we'll be vulnerable. We are not. Half of all the stuff they put money into will become obsolete by the time it's finished. Most of it doesn't work. How much do we really need to defend ourselves? About $200 billion a year. And yet no one will question it. It's like questioning apartheid and settlements in Israel. It's political suicide to touch it, to touch that topic. So nobody will touch it. Look at the consequences. So that is our military supremacy. It's all an illusion. Everything about Washington is a lie. There's nothing honest about Washington's bureaucrats. We just have one giant, massively hyper-extending cancer. It's called our federal government. It is corrupt. It is treacherous. It is usurping our rights. And yet talk with someone and they'll say, oh, my government. Your government what? What part of your government? Are we denuclearizing the war? No. I thought we needed a whole new bunch of nuclear weapons in order to defend ourselves. And who survives a nuclear war? No one. And it's as if you're talking with someone who somehow they got a lobotomy and the whole brain was sucked out their nose. There's nothing up there. And that's for most people. Have a conversation about anything and see how little they know. So our entire military-industrial complex is a fraud. It is not needed. We should close all 900 bases. We should break all these treaties. We get out of NATO, close that criminal organization down, and then hire real career diplomats, people, philosophers, spiritual leaders from all denominations to go in and negotiate because they're the only ones who would not use war as a deterrent, nuclear as a deterrent. And if someone doesn't want to denuclearize, we stop all relationships with them. No more foreign aid, no more trade. Watch how quickly when someone has no more of our money coming, and suddenly those hidden nukes they have become something they could dispose of. So, yeah, we're the American military supremacy, and it's interesting because every single person on Fox, all those, these people have no sense of humanistic values. They have no sense of history. Anything that is humanistic or spiritual, they filter out of their vocabulary. And all you have to do is mention a threat by some country, and immediately it's war, war, boots on the ground. Yeah, yeah, and exactly how's that worked? You know, we have all these nuclear bases. We don't need them. They shouldn't be there. They disrupt stability, and it fosters resentment. Also, the United States military today has garrisons everywhere. Do you think that doesn't impact the local citizens? It does. These are not peacemakers. And also the idea we're supporting our troops. Oh, okay, which troops are you supporting? I did a documentary. I've done three documentaries on our troops, all in support of them, because they have Gulf War syndrome, they have post-traumatic stress disorder. They were put in harm's way for what? When I talk with these soldiers, and I've talked with over 1,000, and I'm supporting programs that help feed them. I even built a whole compound for them, a whole beautiful home for them. I'm not talking about a barracks. I'm talking about a beautiful place overlooking a lake, just so that those who are broke and don't have any money can come and detoxify and reacclimate themselves emotionally to reenter the society. The government hasn't done a damn thing. It's an embarrassment. So in present-day America, expressing reverence for those who serve in uniform is something akin to a religious obligation. Everyone professes to cherish American warriors, yet such bountiful, if superficial, expressions of regard camouflage a growing gap between those who serve and those who applaud from the sidelines. Our present-day military system, based upon the misnamed all-volunteer force, is neither democratic nor effective. Why has discussion and debate about its deficiencies not found a place among the nation's political priorities? I believe that the first people in the battle should be every member of Congress and their family, all their kids. Well, kids over 18. Let them go to battle. I believe all members of the media. I believe every one of these trust babies, every one of these, from Connecticut, whose hedge funds, families and, surgically enhanced brains. I believe all those people on Wall Street should go to war first. I believe your daughters and sisters and brothers and mothers should be taken out of schools and put in armored gear and let them go first. I believe every rich person should go first. I believe every journalist should go first. Every pundit should go first. If you have an opinion that we need to be in a place, then you should be the person in that place. Then let's see when you come back in body bags, or you come back toxic, or you come back with injections of artificial stimulants in your body, you come back taking a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor that wants to make you put a gun in your mouth and blow your brains out in 22 to 23 a day, do. When you're broke, when you can't reacclimate because your family finds you a monster, when you participated in shooting innocent people, when you broke into homes of people who committed no crime and you shot them, you terrorized them, when you put them in a jail and you sexually humiliated them and you sucked sick dogs on them, when you caused depleted uranium shells to be in that environment forever, when you caused their mothers to end up seeing nothing but sons and husbands in prison for no crime they've committed, and you don't think that impacts a person? You don't think that making what you know is a wrong moral decision, but a right military decision, because you're afraid to break the chain of command's idiocy, even though there's a law, it's called the Nuremberg Convention, no longer do you have to obey any law that you feel is immoral? You can no longer say, well, I had to because I was told I'm in the low end of the chain of command, I have to, following orders. Following orders was outlawed in two separate international treaties which usurped all American law. You can say no to any act that you feel is immoral or wrong. You have a right to do that, soldier, and you haven't been told that. I'm telling you that, and we have the laws to prove it. They have fear on their side. So when people come back, so why don't we see how many people working at Goldman Sachs? How about all of them? How about taking every one of those cretins down at Goldman Sachs and put every person in the building, put on a uniform and go now to one of these hot spots. And let's see how that hot spot aligns with the hotshot you think you are with your Gucci bags and everything else you spend your life exploiting and lying to other people to achieve. Have I offended enough people? I got a lot more I can offend. How about taking every executive from every... I could start with KPFA. That would be good. A place that doesn't honor freedom of speech because they didn't allow Bonnie Faulkner and I to talk about. But why should we bring any inconsistency into a dialogue about free speech radio that's not free speech? I'm Gary Noll. Just some random thoughts. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.
Meant to love you, didn't you know it, babe? Didn't you know it? Why couldn't you be content with the love I gave? Oh yeah, I gave you my heart, but you wanted my mind. Oh yeah, your love scared me to death, girl. Oh, it's a choking kind, that's all it is. You can kill a man with a bottle of poison or knife. I know you can. It'll hurt him more to take his pride and ruin his life. Oh, it's a shame, girl. Whatever it is, girl, I surely hope you find. Oh yeah, I tell you that hat don't fit my head. Oh, it's a choking kind. Oh yeah, it make me wanna. Oh yeah. Oh, listen to me. When you fall in love again, girl, take a tip from me, oh yeah. If you don't like the peach, walk on by the tree. That's what you better do, honey. Find what you want, girl. Keep it, treat it sweet and kind. Oh yeah. Get the choking kind. Oh no, don't break your heart, baby. Oh no, I know you love me, really I do, honey.
tell you.